So the talk tonight is called Love Without Limits. Mishu tzrich shetzrich tirgum mi anglit le'ivrit. The Pali word for loving kindness, what we're practicing, is metta, and it really means love, just love. But the character of this love in the Dharma teaching, is that it's a love beyond limits, that cannot be measured, that cannot be contained, that because of that there's something about it that is divine, sacred, a little bit like in the Christian world talk about the kingdom of God, the world of the divine. And so metta and also compassion, karuna, and joy, mudita, and equanimity, upekkha, are called the divine abodes or places, kingdoms, if you like, divine celestial of the sky, of the world above. And they're definitely not part of the conditioned, ordinary, struggling world of samsara. There's something about this limitless love that cannot be measured, that really takes you and is in another place. And the feeling of it is just that the heart is wide, wide open to all situations, all places, all times. It is not dependent on certain conditions for love. Love is just spreading, present, at any time, in any condition. Is not dependent on a certain set of conditions for love to happen. And it's based on something very basic. It's based on our basic love. The love of the mother for the child. The love that the child receives with mother's milk. The love that we have for life. This doesn't have to be explained. This doesn't actually have to be taught. And in the ancient Buddhist tradition, this is not taught. There's no instruction on how to develop love. But there is plenty of instruction on how to extend it beyond boundaries. So there are instructions and there is text on how to apply love, to extend it, to develop it, and that's what we're doing here. We're not inventing love from the beginning. If you remember, we started with appreciation, arakha. Just very basic. We don't have to tell anybody how this works. It's just, you know, life is in front of us. Wow, here it is. So, but to extend it, yes, to bring it out from its cage of conditions. I'm only loving when I get A, B, C, D. Love comes back, or it's loving close people. I'll talk about that in a minute. But this, we need some help. And this is where practice can help us to extend the love, to make it less conditional, less imprisoned by limits. And in the ancient tradition, the practice was sometimes really on a level of just spreading the energy of love and feeling it inside, outside, all over, like as if it's everywhere. And I'll read you the one very typical text from piece from an ancient text, or one of the suttas, about how that used to be practiced then. So it says, a bhikkhu abides, meaning he lives, he stays, pervading, spreading one quarter, means this one quarter of the circle, with a mind full of loving kindness, and then the second quarter, and the third quarter, and the fourth quarter, and above and below, and around, and everywhere, and everything, everyone else, equally to himself. He abides pervading the entire world around him, all-encompassing world, with a mind full of loving kindness, abundant, much of it, exalted, high, immeasurable, without any hostility and without any ill will. And he considers this and understands it thus. Deliverance of mind through loving kindness is conditioned and volitionally produced. Still, the mind with loving kindness that it needs to practice loving kindness is conditioned. But whatever is conditioned is impermanent and subject to ending. And so, understanding that, he attains destruction. He ends all the taints, the issues that bind him. So through, in other words, through love, he attains liberation. Through love, which is itself unconditioned, but he still understands that this unconditional love is the entrance gate to the beyond. He has to understand that. It's not itself the end of the story. So this gives you a taste of the flavor of the ancient way that they looked at this practice. And we saw that not only is this love basic to a human being, but it's also basic to our silent practice of awareness, vipassana. That, again, just being with what is actually opens the heart. Being with what is being with. It's the poem that I read earlier that of Wordsworth, where he says, just the silent awareness is enough to begin to open the heart. With an eye made quiet by the power of harmony and the deep power of joy, we see into the life of things. The quietness, the attention, the readiness to see and be with what is opens the heart, and we feel it. Mm. You all know at the end of a retreat, Vipassana retreat, how everyone is so bubbling, and the energy is so high, it's almost like too much. You know, everyone's gathering in the room and sort of the excitement and enthusiasm and love of life and wants to talk and wants to share and wants to eat and wants to say thank you, and it's like just the awareness of being opens the heart. But nevertheless, we all experience love as limited, and we experience it as limited because it passes away. We love for a while and then we hurt. Love arises and joy arises and then pain takes its place when something happens that we don't like, or when we lose something or someone, or we get ill, or 100 different reasons, the joy, the love turns to pain and it passes away. Or love is only there when we have it back. When it's returned, we love someone only if they love us. And so it's conditional on some sort of exchange of love. And if someone doesn't love us anymore, then our love stops or turns into anger, turns into hate. And so it's conditional sometimes on being loved. It's conditional sometimes on control, like I only love you if you do what I say, or how jealousy arises. You see someone you love, your partner, talking to somebody else, and you begin immediately, the thought comes, well, they're having another relationship, and so quickly that thought, jealousy, arises. And partly you want to control that person, your partner. You don't want them to run all over the world meeting other people or getting involved in other relationships. They want to control. It's natural, and but it's colouring the love. Love is not just streaming freely. It's coloured, it's limited by the need to control or the need to have back. And all the time we're seeing, we meet the limited love. Our friendliness, for example. I brought it up in the group today. This phrase in the Jewish tradition of ani eircha kodem, nachon mashu kaze? Yeah, kodmim. So in other words, just the ones in your town, but not the ones in the next town. I'll be friendly up to here, but not those neighbours. Ashkenim ha'ele ani lo rotze. Or ashkenim ha'sham ha'palestinaim lo. Or ashkenim levanoni lo. Or olam sham lo. Or aval rak ken, am sheli ken. My people, my house, my group, my... So we make boundaries to our friendliness. And all of these things is... about the limited nature, the conditional nature of our love. And that is why we need practice. It's not, in our experience too, with many retreats and so on, it's not enough to rely on the natural love that arises when we practice awareness and quietness. The love does arise, but it's very helpful to practice and to develop unconditional love as well. And this is the purpose of this retreat. And here, the colour, the taste of the feeling life that arises with our silent practice is very important. In other words, we have plenty of the retreats here in Ein Dor, and the dogs in the dog hospital are barking. And after a few days sitting quietly, everyone is touched, and people go there and look at the dogs, especially, you know, they're often injured and hurt, and the heart is touched. But it's, in a way, the heart is touched as a fruit of the practice of silent awareness. Here, when the heart is touched, we practice the heart only. The heart being touched. That's our starting point, is the heart that is touched. Or the heart that is listening to pain or to joy. There is where we begin. We leave the breath and the practice with breath and body and the concentration practice and the mindfulness practice. We leave it and we go there to the heart. So the heart is not the fruit of silent, ordinary silent mindfulness. It is the source of our practice. And that's the difference between this retreat and a regular mindfulness retreat. And the way we start is with simple feelings. We start simply. We start with appreciation. Again, everyone has it. It's just a beautiful day. Sun is shining, can't be a better weather, the light is clear and beautiful, there's birds sort of jumping out of the trees and sort of racing across the sky. I think I saw a parrot today, a tuki coming with colours, I don't know, I think it was a tuki. There's something so shining about a day like this. This shining day touches us, and we all feel it, in more or less. And that's the beginning. That's appreciation. That's where we start, with those simple feelings, or gratitude, or thank you for the food that the staff cook for us freely from their own will, and their joy of giving, and their joy to serve. And we appreciate that they're giving for us food. No one's paying them, and no one's forcing them. They're from their will and their heart, they are giving. So our response is gratitude. And these are the kind of feelings we start with as a beginning ground. They're natural. They're natural. And then we encourage this with phrases, mishpatim. And the mishpatim are classical. They're not invented by Simi or Stephen. They are there from maybe hundreds of years of traditional practice. And the phrase is sometimes misunderstood. Sometimes they feel a little bit artificial. And that's partly because of our own maybe past experience with Dharma practice, that we practice with maybe with breath and body, so to start with phrases seems a bit strange or new. And we may not be practiced with phrases at all in our life, very little, and may seem a bit strange or crude. But we can regard the phrases as a source of reminding the heart, a way to remind the heart to allow the heart to be touched through language. And by the way, we've all got language going through our mind. Mostly it's absolute rubbish. It's just non-stop chattering going on about every stupid thing that we really wish we could shut it up. So what we're doing here is not shutting up the mind, but replacing it with another language that is more helpful to us, the language of the heart. And the language, if we actually hold it for a moment, the language is just words that remind the heart: happy, happiness, acceptance, love. I love myself just as I am. That's very powerful. So if we just sort of regard it not as a kind of a problem or something to think about, but more like triggers of the heart, that just the word happy in there, what does it do to the heart? Happy kind of arrives from the head to the heart and does something. So again, happy comes down from the head to the heart, does something. Shakes up something, moves something. We don't know what, and well, maybe some of the possibilities I'll also talk about in a minute. But regard it like that, as something, the word simply shaking up the feeling. And when the feeling is shaken up, our feeling life becomes more clear to us, becomes more clear. It doesn't say that we have to be happy. The word happy is just to shake up the heart. Doesn't say we must be happy, and it certainly doesn't say that if I say this word 1,000 times today, then everyone in the world is going to be in bliss. There may be no outcome. We don't expect any result from it. It's not about if I give the word happy, or I give metta to even the benefactor. The Metiv, the benefactor 1,000 miles away, is going to have a wonderful day because of what I'm doing here. We don't know. The benefactor may have a terrible day, and we're sitting here giving metta and expecting him to have a wonderful day, or her. I have an awful day. It's not that we can expect anything. We're not trying to have outcomes, tota'ot. We are simply shaking up the heart to make the feeling life more in front of us rather than just on the side, to make it here, to bring it here. And it helps to touch us, to keep to be touched. And it's already happening, by the way. You can hear from the groups that we are beginning to be touched more, touched by the dog barking in the hospital there, touched by the day, touched by difficulty that comes up. It is happening, and we are here to allow us to be touched. We start, just like in the quote from the Buddha, we start with the self. The self as with the rest of the world. But we start with the self partly because we all need it. We are the basis of, we are the center of this samsara. And we're also often down on ourselves quite a lot. I think in the Western world we have specialists. We are because mumchim in being down on ourselves, in giving ourselves a hard time. Criticism, judgment, shiputiyut, bikoret al atzmenu, guilt, Jewish guilt, non-Jewish guilt. We give ourselves a hard time. So it's good to start with the metta for ourselves, and it's an important starting place. But I should say, some of you already expressed that as soon as you start doing this kind of practice, whoa, the opposite turns up. That start doing, mentioning the word happy, and all the misery and anger and reaction and resistance turns up instead of, and you feel bad, I should be happy, and what's happening? I'm angry, and I'm fed up, and I'm bored, and I'm resisting, and I don't like this, and I don't want to be here, and I should be happy, no? I'm mentioning happy 100 times. Why am I so angry? And the truth is that the heart is very unpredictable. The mind is pretty out of control, and the heart even more out of control. We just can't control the heart. We can try with the mind to say happy 100,000 times, but the heart does what it wants. And we can't control the heart. And the reason is that the heart has already had all the years of our life, of all the other voices, of pain, of hurt, of scars, tzalakot, of every kind, of wounds, of difficulty, of struggle. That's the heart accumulated so much of that stuff that for us now to say, expect the heart to be happy just because we say the word happy 100 times, that's asking a bit much. The heart has its own memory. The heart has its own stories to tell. So all we're doing with the word happy is actually giving the heart an opportunity, like I said, shaking the heart. It's giving an opportunity for the heart to express itself, for the feeling life to express itself. And the indeed, giving an opportunity means we actually... it's almost like irritating the heart. It's almost like throwing a stone into a clear water, pool of water, and out come the waves. So we throw the stone, and there's waves, and we see the mud at the bottom. We disturb. So out can come anger and jealousy and irritation, and these things can come out. There's a very nice image in the tradition. That the practice is a bit like drops of water that drop onto a hot plate, and when they touch the hot plate, what happens? Psh! There's a kind of moment of reaction, steam, and then another drop comes. Psh! So that's the heart's reaction. That's what happens. We're reacting with anger, with irritation, with some fears and so on. But slowly, slowly, the reaction gets less and less. They keep cooling the hot plate with cool water, and it gets slowly, slowly more more cool, and the reactions get less, and all these difficult heart memories begin to kind of dissolve. I never forget, and at every single retreat on metta that I've taught, I always come up with the same story, because it's touched me so deeply, about a woman, and I think it was in the Marcia retreat, who had cancer, and it was a very difficult situation. She has young children, and she had at that time quite advanced cancer, and she carried with her oxygen, you know, with wheels, into the hall and out of the hall. And where we had a small group, it was a metta retreat with Marcia Rose in Kibbutz Inbar. And so we had a sort of discussion, and I was meeting her every day, and she said, it's terrible. I have so much anger and so much rage and so much despair, and it's just coming up, pouring out. I knew there was something else coming, because I remember until now, this is many years ago, I don't know how many years ago was this? Long 13, time? Yeah, maybe 12, 13 years ago. But I remember that there was something coming, because I remember her eyes until today, because there was a shine in her eyes that wasn't just anger. There wasn't anger in her eyes. She was saying this, but there wasn't anger. There was a shine in her eyes. And so I said, "And?" And she said, "And something amazing happened. I walked out onto the path, and I looked out over the fields and the hills, and I had a moment, unbelievable moment of unconditional love that just took me over completely, and I feel so much joy." And it was just this one moment of unconditional love. I had a lot of struggle. But it was almost like chesed for her at that moment, and she was remarkably happy in this retreat. I remember her joking and laughing about the having to pull her oxygen around after her. She was laughing. She was kind of So one of the things that we should know is that when these resistances come up, that the language of the heart that we don't want, but the memory of the heart that is there that we can't control, we should know that we can only really develop the unlimited love by knowing the limits. The unlimited comes from meeting the limits. If we meet our anger and it dissolves, we meet our pain, it slowly dissolves, we meet our loneliness, our loss, our sense of things falling that we that give us pain, or disappearing that give us pain. That these are our limits, and as they dissolve, we stay with it, and we stay with the phrases and the feelings and the energy around the phrases, we stay with it, then slowly, slowly we get beyond those limits. The heart tells us other stories. The limits, we show the limits of control, of anger, of these things, they show us our limits, and the limitless comes from breaking through the limits. In some way or other, love develops through resistance. It's a bit like when we walk, we need to have resistance, friction on the floor. Otherwise we can't walk. And walking on ice, can't walk on ice, difficult. So we need friction, we need resistance. We need to move through resistance. Like the wheel, it moves because of resistance. It can move. So our the development of love happens through resistance, through seeing that's our limit. Okay, I'm with that limit. I'm staying with that limit, and I'm going to keep going with it. I'm going to keep beyond it. I'm going to listen to all the other voices as well. I'm not going to be stopped on the limit. And very often, the limit is actually stopping our by not meeting it. Sometimes in the name of spiritual development or spiritual practice or meditation practice, we actually don't go to this limit, especially limit of the heart. We step back from the limit into a comfortable silence. And then very often we say, I had a great retreat. It was very silent, very nice, but something wasn't done. Something wasn't challenged. So we didn't meet resistance. Because we kind of step back from the limit in order to have a nice retreat, a quiet retreat, a pleasant retreat. So there's a sort of thing there that we should be aware of in our own life and our own spiritual journey, not what's called a spiritual bypass or kev, to be in that sort of practice, but avoid the limits, meeting those limits. So love develops through meeting our resistance and moving forward, even if it's difficult. And here, in a way, when we challenge the heart with phrases or with practice, heart practice, we need to take some risks. Take a few risks. Take what comes. Let the heart express itself. Be there with it. Keep going with it. Keep going with the phrases and with the energies of the heart. And keep going with the resistance, and we'll find ourselves beyond it. I think one of the... also what will help us is actually not to trust the... To trust the process. We've just been here a day and a bit. It's a bit like in the Jewish world. Metta practice is a little bit like prayer. A little bit, not the same, but a little bit like tefillah. That in the Jewish world, it's very clear that we shouldn't expect from tefillah any results. Tefillah is for its own sake. And here, the somewhat similar metta is, in a way, for its own sake. We're doing the practice for its, for we do, we're practicing love for the sake of love. And so, it kind of, we need us to just to let go, and just to practice and let it take us. Just let go, trust and let go. Whatever comes is coming. Keep waking up the heart. It may help us a little bit to remember what the ancient teaching that the heart is a kind of vibration or an energy or quality, and to feel that heart energy, which can be behind the words, can be around the words or near the thought, but the heart is expressing something, can be the colour of ilu, the colour of our thoughts. Not the actual colour, but the way thoughts have a taste or a quality around them. Pay attention to the subtle side of feeling life. How the thoughts have a colour or a taste or a energy. And we may be saying the phrases or the words, and there's a certain energy in the body or in the heart that may be delicate, but be aware of that, because that's... holding the, that's the energy of the heart, which we need to kind of listen to, develop. So finally, talking about the vibration, talking about more subtle things, the feelings, all practice, all Dharma practice goes from the form to the formless. So meditation instructions on breath, for example, starts with form. We may feel the breath very clear, a beginning and an end and so on. Gradually things get less formed, more formless, more subtle, more empty. So be aware of this too, that the phrases and our experiences may have at the beginning form, the phrase is a form, a word is a form, but the energy around it is more formless. So all Dharma practice is partly that journey from form to formless. And the beginning we are more in form because that's easier, like practice with the body. It's easier than practicing with the mind. So that's why at the beginning of retreats we start with the body. Form is easier to handle. Slowly, slowly we go to the mind. So we're going from form to formless in an ordinary mindfulness or vipassana retreat. And same here. Maybe the words are form. Keep moving, looking for the subtle, being aware of the qualities inside, and being awake to the formless. Thank you, so we'll sit for a few moments.